OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. The views on this podcast are our own and are intended for information and educational purposes only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of sex and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex.
This one's been a long time coming.
It's been a long time. I am so, so over the moon thrilled that we have finally connected with Dr. Claire Lynch.
The time zones are tough. The joy of the podcast is the international audience, but it's also difficult to manage.
You're on two opposite ends of the globe.
But we made it work. And we had an amazing conversation with Dr. Claire Lynch about an occupational perspective of sexuality.
So sit back and enjoy. So we are here today with Dr. Claire Lynch, and I am so ecstatic that she is on the podcast today because this has been several years in the making, trying to coordinate and get Claire here. So welcome, Dr. Claire Lynch. Welcome to OT After
Dark. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your background.
Yes, so I'm Dr. Claire Lynch. I'm a lecturer in occupational therapy at the Australian Catholic University here in Melbourne. But as you can tell from my accent, I'm not Australian, I'm Irish. So I graduated in the University of Ulster in Belfast. And after my graduation, I decided to come to Australia. And that was 13 plus years ago. I was coming for a year and I'm still here. So I ended up doing my PhD in Australia through the La Trobe University. And yeah, started working as an occupational therapist clinically, first of all, at different agencies and hospitals around Melbourne. And then went into an academic role once I had my PhD finished.
Awesome. Welcome. So one of the reasons why we really wanted you on the podcast is you wrote an absolutely brilliant article titled Applying an Occupational Lens to Thinking About and Addressing Sexuality, where you really kind of took the occupational perspective of health and put that sexuality lens on it. So I would love if you can kind of talk about that work, kind of give our listeners some ideas of kind of how you came to that and what it's all about.
And I think it would be good because while JJ and I are like almost fangirls of the occupational perspective of health and doing becoming belonging, it might be good for our listeners who aren't as familiar if you could give just a kind of a brief overview of what the occupational perspective of health is.
Yeah, of course. So how it all came about was when I decided to do my PhD, I really wanted to focus in on sexuality and to look at how an occupational therapist can address sexuality. I saw that it was an area that OTs we're not doing so well in, and that it was an occupation and that it could have an occupational perspective. So as part of my PhD, that was where this article was developed. It was to really interview occupational therapists who were addressing sexuality and to see how they were doing it within the scope of their practice and within the boundaries of their profession and doing it from that occupational perspective. And as a result, we have the occupational perspective of sexuality, and it really is based on the occupational perspective of health, which Anne Wilcock, who is, I would say, is my, who I would have a fan girl against, is she's just fantastic in terms of how she really focused in on when we look at an occupation, we look at it from them four dimensions. And those four dimensions are doing, the being, the becoming, and the belonging of an occupation. So there was four kind of dimensions. So as part of the article that I did, it was really looking at those four dimensions and looking at it from a sexuality perspective. So if we kind of break them down, first of all, is that doing? As we know, OTs were very much doers. We like to get in there and to try and make a difference to our clients and to do what they need to do. So when we look at the doing, it really is that physical act of doing an activity or doing an occupation. When we look at sexuality, that can be having sexual intercourse. It can be masturbation. It can be basically even just hugging and kissing individuals or and things like that. So that really is the doing aspect of it. And as OTs, I think we were really good at that part. And when the OTs that I interviewed, they were all very good at doing that part of the doing, of trying to make a difference, breaking it down, the task, using our task analysis to break down the occupation and to help individuals to do the sexual activities that they wanted to do. The next element is the being. So that is really seeing the person as a sexual being. And in further research that I've done, is that's what people with disabilities want to be seen as. They want to be seen as sexual beings. They want to be seen as that they have a sexual identity and that they have their roles of either being a husband, a wife, a partner. They have their sexual orientations, whether they're gay, they're lesbian, whatever it might be for them. So that real sense of being who they are as a sexual being. And I think that's the next element. So we can address the doing, we can address the being. The next stage is the becoming. And for a lot of our clients, it might be that they have a disability that happens later on in life. So they have to become a new individual and a new sexual person in that sense. Or it might be as we grow and develop, like from when we're a child into our adulthood, that we become a different individual in terms of our sexuality. So that real sense of growth and development is that becoming aspect of the occupational perspective of sexuality. And then the last element is the belonging. And I think for me, this is the most important, especially with for the research that I've done when I've really looked at the consumer involvement of people with disabilities and what they want, is that they really want to belong to society and to have that connectedness. And they want to be able to have that connectedness to their relationships that they're in, but also to their social and environment that they're in. So that real sense of belonging and feeling that they belong to society and that they are part of, you know, their sexual relationships that they're in. So I think as occupational therapists, we can address one element. So we can just address the being. A lot of mental health OTs that I speak to, they say that they very much focus in on that identity and helping people to develop that sense of it. People working in rehab might focus in more on the doing. But my perspective is that to address sexuality in a holistic and a client-centered and a real in a wholesome way is to really address all four elements, that we're looking at the doing, we're looking at the being, becoming and belonging for each individual that we work with. And hopefully what this framework does is it gives people, occupational therapists that are working in this space, a real framework to think about, well, this is how I can address it. And when I break it down, looking at these four elements, it helps me to do it within the boundaries of my profession and to feel comfortable and confident to do so. So that's, I could talk forever about it, but that's kind of it and a bit of a summary.
I could listen forever. It's such a beautiful way to look at sexuality.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a holistic way of viewing it, that, you know, all of these parts are all interconnected to really kind of get this holistic view of that individual as a sexual being.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. Really connecting them all together. And I think, you know, I've done another article where it looks like at students addressing sexuality and their preparedness and confidence to address it. And a lot of the students would say that, you know, they're not ready to start looking at the doing aspect or perhaps straight away, but maybe they can just jump to the being aspect and actually just recognize the person that they're working with as a sexual being, that they are a husband, they are a wife, they are a partner or whatever it might be, that even just identifying them with that and recognizing that, that's the first part of addressing sexuality.
Which I think is a part we are, I mean, it's so simple, but I think we're missing it constantly.
Very much so.
And we're making so much other stuff that we're just kind of forgetting that.
Yeah, and we can make a lot of assumptions. I was reading a lovely book on the way on the train this morning. It's the Handy company Bumpin', who have created the book, and reading the stories of people with disabilities in that book really emphasizes that they want to just be seen as sexual beings. They want to see their identity being shown. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that goes along with, and I've talked about this in several other episodes as well, but, you know, the kind of one of the common models that are used in addressing sexuality is like the implicit model, the explicit model. But one of my personal favorites is the recognition model. And the recognition model, that first step of that before you can address sexuality in practice is to recognize that individuals are sexual beings. So I think that just fits in beautifully with that type of model and that type of philosophy, that we really have to start there before we can really address this in other areas as well.
Very much so, yeah. And I think the doing side, people sometimes shy away from that. But the way I kind of explain the doing is that, you know, we do personal care tasks, we do shower assessments, we're seeing people in their vulnerable estates, and that, you know, we can address sexuality in the same way as a task analysis. Break it down. What does the person want to be able to do? What activities? You don't have to be in the room when they're having sex. You can just help them to maybe set up and positionings, even just giving them education about positionings and things like that. You don't have to be there with them when they're being intimate with their partners. It's about, you know, giving them the opportunities to be involved in the activities and the occupations that they want to be involved in.
Yeah, I think students in particular underestimate the power of a conversation, that you can relay a lot of information and you can help somebody a lot by talking through some things. And yeah, you don't have to be right there for the doing of everything to help somebody with all of this.
Yeah, and that was what we found in the article that I did with the students, was that the main thing they want taught from a university perspective and when they're out on placement is to be able to have those conversations. So to do role plays, to be able to have those, scenarios that they can think about, well, what would I do in this scenario if a client came to me with this concern, and to be able to act those out and to think about, well, what way would I address it? What way would I say it? And how would I have those conversations? And as you say, conversations are, you know, a really powerful tool that we have to our exposure that we can actually use to make sure our clients feel comfortable with this topic.
So let's go to the becoming. How do you think we can help clients with the becoming aspect of all of this?
Yeah, I think it's that real growth and development and that change. Sometimes for our clients, if we think of our clients that say might have had a spinal cord injury, so something instant that has changed in their life and has changed their physical ability to be able to be involved in sexual activities or and their sexuality, that to help them to become who they want to become after their condition or something that has happened, that we as occupational therapists can help to explore that. What does their relationships look like now? What might have been a partner and that kind of a relationship, now maybe the partner is their carer. How can we help them to change that when they are thinking about their sexuality, that they're no longer a carer, that they're back to being a partner and having those conversations with the client or also with the client and their partner. I think the becoming also is about helping them to work through that change and the changes that are happening, and to perhaps get through the different obstacles that might be in their way. And that can be very different for each type of client, but to help them overcome those and to become who they want to become.
Mm-hmm. I think too, you had talked when you were kind of given the brief overview earlier about, you know, that it's during this time of growth and development as well. So that makes me think about, you know, young adults and youth with disabilities, and thinking about like comprehensive sexual education and making sure that it is accessible as these, you know, youth are kind of becoming who they are in this stage of development. And, you know, how can OTs then help to foster that within, whether it's a school setting, outpatient setting, to make sure that they're getting this comprehensive sex education and that it's accessible for them.
Yeah,
as well.
I just did a research study recently with people with intellectual disabilities, and from that, that study, we saw that the clients themselves, they wanted information at different stages. So they were getting it when they were in schools, whether that was a special school or a mainstream school, and they were getting the information and the education, but it wasn't really relevant to them at that stage. And then once they started to become, say, 18, 20s, in that 25-year-old kind of bracket, it was then something that was that they were wanting to explore, and they were needing further information at that stage again, and that wasn't happening. And it really illustrated the gap for as occupational therapists, we can be supporting them to have that information and that education at a time when it's needed. Because I think what happens at that stage is that they might start to show inappropriate behaviors. So that inappropriate doing, if we want to put it into the occupational perspective of sexuality, that inappropriate of doing activities, but not actually looking at, well, why are they doing these inappropriate behaviors? It might be that they're just not informed and educated on how they show their sexual expressions and when they do those sexual activities.
Did that research show anything about the being aspect? Because I think what I see anecdotally is people don't recognize people with intellectual and developmental disabilities as sexual beings, which then leads to, it's kind of a chain reaction of events then, because then the becoming and the belonging and the doing isn't really addressed because the being isn't being recognized. Did you find that in the research?
Yeah, very much so. When they talked about the being aspect of it, they talked about that the education that they did receive at that mainstream or in special schools wasn't really tailored for them individually, and that sometimes that education needs to be very one-on-one, and because every person will be quite different, and that if they're not being seen as a sexual being, and that might, it might even be, say, their family members or the educators, and that not seeing them as that they have a sexuality and that they want to explore that sexuality. And that was very much an outcome from this study, was that they want that to be explored more. They want to be even just recognized.
It becomes more, I mean, it becomes a lot of the safety around sexual activity and not the actual, I can enjoy this and have pleasure because I'm a sexual being, part of
Yeah, and I think that's where
sexuality.
education and them being really informed really comes into play.
What about belonging? What can we do to promote belonging to one's sexuality?
Belonging, I think, is really easy in terms of what we're already doing. Like, we help our clients, especially if you're working in community, to connect into certain groups, to be involved in different activities, to go into the workforce. All of those activities and occupations can have a sexual element to them. So we could be assisting our clients to go out and go on a date, and how to access to go on that date. It might be that we help them to access online dating. We're not sitting with them there while they're looking at all the different profiles. No, we're helping them to access the computer so that they can access those different websites if that's something that they want to do. So I think the belonging is probably the most easiest, but one that's probably forgotten about, because we can do that, and we're probably already doing that in our roles as occupational therapists. But it's just thinking about the sexual lens of it, as well, and how we can use that in that belonging sense.
I was going to ask, where do you think the few your future research is going to take you?
I think from the occupational perspective of sexuality, I can see the benefit, and I've heard the benefit of it from clinicians and OTs that are working with and using that framework to guide their practice. I feel that the next step for me is to hear more of those consumer voices, and to see what they really want and how that might be shaped by the occupational perspective of sexuality. Is there any elements that we're missing that we need to address? So at the moment, my focus is really on the consumer involvement within my research, but also about product design and assistive technology that can really assist clients within this space. So I mentioned before about bumping. So I'm doing a lot of work with bumping at the moment in terms of the products that they're developing. So from an OT perspective, how can we support that development as well? And what kind of aspects do our clients need when we're developing those sex toys and things like that for our clients? The last kind of area of my research, I think, is the outcome measures. We need more assessments and standardized assessments that our clients, or that our OTs can use to support their practice and to show why this area is so valuable. And so to have an outcome measure to can say, well, before the OT interventions and assessments, this was where the client was at. And now afterwards, this is where we're at. We've made a difference. And I think overall my research, that's the scope that I want to do, is to really make a difference for people in the area of sexuality.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely an area that's definitely needed, because I think up until recently, there wasn't anything until the OPZ then was developed. Yeah, what, 2 years ago, OTs didn't really have anything to be able to get those outcomes to show beyond just clinical judgments and things like that.
And I think that was a bit of a cop out then for OTs to say, well, I can't really address it because I've got nothing to use. Where now there's the OPC, there's something there to say, well, here's an assessment. You can use this to guide your practice and to help you to address this area.
And I find something that's interesting, and especially so, you know, we're based out of the United States, and part of our occupational therapy practice framework based on our national organization is it specifically outlines that sexuality is an activity of daily living. It's also under social participation. So it falls with under the scope of OT practice. So I'm curious, in other countries, like in Australia, is it that explicitly stated that this is the scope of OT practice?
It's not explicitly stated in the definition, like from Australian OT Association, but it is something that is addressed, because of when we look at, you know, sexuality as a whole, it does come under our occupations.
Even here, there's some pushback, though, in the United States, even though it's
we try to.
It's clearly stated there. There's still some pushback that it doesn't belong, which I think it's a hard argument to make that it doesn't belong.
Yes.
It's a very important occupation for many, many people,
yeah,
whether they have a partner or they do not have a partner.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's another assumption that we always make, that, you know, people will say, or occupational therapists will say, well, I don't need to address it with this client. They don't have a partner. And it's like, well, no, that's how you can actually facilitate them if they do want to have a partner, or that they can do sexual activities on their own, you know, and that they're still a sexual being, even if they don't have a partner.
Yeah, people are likely thinking about masturbation if that was part of their life prior to a condition, or if, you know, developmentally, if they're just reaching that age where it's a natural part of development. It's not like it's not on people's minds.
Right.
I remember I had one client who, she didn't have a partner, but her sexual identity was wearing her red lipstick. And when I was working clinically, part of her rehab was her being able to put back on her red lipstick, because it was such a part of her and part of her sexual identity. So that real aspect of sexual being. And when I always use that example to explain it to students, that's addressing someone's sexuality, helping them to feel sexually and to look sexy. That's part of them. That's part of their identity. That's addressing sexuality.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, there's so many little things about the shoes people decide to wear, the clothing people decide to wear, the accessories people decide to wear, and suddenly you end up in a hospital and you get those nice little hospital gowns. And
yeah, we've had a lovely
socks.
Yeah.
We had a lovely, in Australia this week, they had the Australian Fashion Week, and they actually had people with disabilities on the catwalk and showing how that, you know, everybody can be sexy and wear the clothes that they want to wear, and to have that opportunity to be involved on the catwalk was fantastic. I was like, that's sexuality. I was telling my students all about it, because I think that's another element of, you know, ensuring that everybody's included.
And not only is that being, that's such a good example of belonging. And like, again, all of the, again, looking at all these different facets and how they all come together in one way.
Well, and I'm thinking, I'm blanking on her name, the Broadway actress, Allie. Ooh, Stoker. She was in Oklahoma, though, but she played the character 80 Annie. That's a very sexual character. She's got the song, I'm Just a Girl Who Can't Say No, about how boy crazy she is. And she won the Tony Award for doing that on Broadway. But I mean, it's such a huge deal to see that person in a wheelchair. And it wasn't anything special or different. It was just somebody having their sexual feelings and having fun with it, too. It was such a great thing to see. I got to look up her name now, because it's going to bother me.
And that inclusion, that really is that belonging aspect, I believe.
Ally Stroker, Tony Award winner for Oklahoma. Or have you been able to use this occupational perspective of sexuality with clinicians, and kind of what are clinicians' responses to this model, and how are they using it in practice? And what have you been hearing from those OTs in the field?
Yeah, I think OTs are finding it as a way that kind of gives them that kind of guidance when they're working on sexuality with their clients, that they can kind of think, well, have I covered all aspects? Maybe it starts off that it is to do with the doing, and that the client has come to them saying, I want to be able to be involved in sexual activity with my partner, but I just don't have the energy. And then they're giving them energy conservation techniques and positioning techniques. And then they kind of go, well, wait a minute, I need to think about the being. How is the relationship? How are they feeling within that relationship and that belonging aspect? So I think what clinicians have said, it really gives them that framework to think about sexuality in that holistic perspective. So thinking about all aspects, and it gives them a framework to kind of use as leverage if somebody says, well, why are you addressing sexuality? And they can say, well, I'm doing this because it is an occupation and it's related to my area of practice, and that's why I'm addressing it with my client. So it kind of gives them that kind of support to be able to address it.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to have a framework that kind of helps guide what this is going to look like, specifically from an OT perspective, because I feel like, you know, OTs that have been addressing sexuality have really had to pull from other disciplines, whether it's psychology, from nursing, social work, all of that, to kind of see, okay, well, how is that field addressing this and how can we put this OT perspective on it? Where here you specifically are outlining it from an occupational perspective.
And it also then helps them to make that decision as well when they look at something and they go, wait, maybe this is out of my scope of practice. Maybe this is where I do need to refer on to a sex therapist as well. And I think that's your gut feeling. If you feel that it's not within your scope, that you then refer on and you get that support from the other experts as well. Because although it is having that occupational perspective of sexuality, it's also remembering that we don't do this alone. I think every area of OT that we work in, we don't do it alone, that we're always working within that team and knowing when we need that support from other healthcare professionals.
Beautifully, perfectly said.
What would you like? So if the world were perfect and you could have it exactly how you want it, 10 years from now, what would you like to see in terms of the profession of occupational therapy addressing sexuality, and what tools would we have and how would that look?
I actually did out a 10-year research plan the other day. So you're kind of, hey. You're letting me tell my story before it's even told. But in terms of, I want that every client is considered a sexual being, because I really don't think that's happening. And that they are able to address their areas and their concerns with the healthcare professional that they want to address it with. I think this is where OTs, we can really stand up and be leaders in this area and really show our strengths. And I think that's something OTs are sometimes shy of doing, but to really stand up and say, this is an area that we can take hold of and that we can address, and we can do it really well. And to do that really well, I think we need to have the frameworks and the outcome measures and the assessments and the interventions. And I think that's where we need to do a little bit more work in, to really give OTs the tools that they can do this and to do it really effectively. And hopefully then we can change the world to make sure that everybody is considered a sexual being.
That would be beautiful. And it's happening.
So we'll check in 10 years' time and we'll have it achieved, hopefully.
We will. I do have hope for that. I mean, I know, and our listeners might not know, but I think definitely the three of us are aware of people sitting right here, but there's people all over the world doing good work. So you're doing great work. JJ here is doing some great research. There's a lot of other people. You're doing some work with Beth Ann Walker. There's people doing all of the stuff that can make that dream come true.
Exactly. I think back to when I first started doing my PhD, and I really did feel very isolated, and I was on my own, and I was the only person kind of working on this area. And now I'm connected in, and it's fantastic to see so many people across the world that is doing this area of occupational therapy and really focusing in on it, because I think between us all we can definitely make a big change and a big impact.
The joy of modern technology to be able to connect with all these people around the world.
Exactly. It's a great sexy network that we have going.
It is a sexy network.
Oh, I like it. Yes.
It's a sexy, sexy network.
Any final thoughts, Claire, on sexuality, OT, intimacy, all that?
I think, just let's all keep making a difference and really getting the research out there to really promote the area of sexuality and occupational therapy.
Keep it sexy.
Keep it sexy, yes.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Claire Lynch, for being on OT After Dark. It was truly, truly a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that was totally worth the wait. 100%.
100% worth the wait. We're super nerdy when it becomes to all things doing, becoming, beloved.
Oh, I nerded out so hard during that conversation. It was just.
You went into a little zone for a moment there.
I did.
You went into a little occupational perspective of health zone.
I know.
As you do.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
So I hope everybody enjoyed that. I hope everybody gained some new perspective from that. I gained some new perspective from that.
And hopefully, you know, whether it's students, future practitioners, current practitioners, can use the occupational perspective of sexuality within their practice to really look holistically at individuals as sexual beings.
And as usual, we'll post the articles referenced on our website. I highly recommend reading the article we spent most of the time talking about.
Yes, again, the article is Applying an Occupational Lens to Thinking About and Addressing Sexuality.
Definitely. It's a must read.
Absolutely.
And on that note, everybody remember,
sex is an ADL. Cheers!